is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We go to the Ukraine conflict and headlines. This third Russian airfield hit by drone as Moscow accuses Ukraine. I'm told from conversations with informed people in Washington, Patrick Tucker of Defense One, that the Ukrainians are using old Soviet drones, a drone that was designed for reconnaissance. It flies at about 20,000 feet. It's on a Russian-built engine, old-fashioned, out of date, 20th century. The Ukrainians are mounting a contact bomb on the bottom of it and flying that into something that will explode, like a bomber or a gas tank. The third field is in the Kursk region. However, this doesn't take away from the larger concern about the war ongoing into the wintertime. We'll come to Europe for a moment. Everybody in Europe watching, because it's cold in London, it's cold in Berlin. But right now, the talk of talk, the President of the United States, the President of France, the General Secretary of the People's Republic of China, and other voices are looking to lay down conditions for talks, including the President of Russia. The conditions look impossible, but they are the first time we've seen, to my knowledge, this talk of talks not yet. Gregory, the negotiations, are they underway now? How to regard these denials that we're going to talk to you unless?
All the participants are literally feeling each other out at this point. Russia, the United States, the European Union and NATO, and the Ukrainians themselves. They're all in a position where they cannot openly move in a direct line towards a conclusion, a resolution of this situation, because they've all painted themselves into positions from which they cannot resile. Russia cannot afford to give up the territory it has gained, because it has gained what it said it wanted to gain, which is the eastern region, and if it controls that, then it's got some fairly secure territory down there to the Black Sea. So it can't afford to give that up on a strategic level. That would be really a massive disaster for Moscow if that happened. The Ukrainian government itself, while it said it cannot give up eastern Ukraine, in fact is more able to give up eastern Ukraine than Russia is able to give it up. So that's the, if you like, the ultra, ultra bottom line. But of course, Kiev cannot afford to say that. It has to say that Ukraine is an intact country when, in fact, it's historically always been a patchwork of moving parts. So Kiev, having said that, and it said it from the beginning, even before this, the present Zelensky government, in reality, started in 2004, but then particularly in 2014, to start the civil war itself, because it did not want eastern Ukraine to vote in the presidential elections. If the East voted in the presidential elections, you wouldn't have those western Ukrainians dominating the government because they didn't have the numbers. So they had to find a way to stop eastern Ukraine from voting, and they did so. But that resulted in a, if you like, a geopolitical shift from which they can't recover. So they've sort of painted themselves into a very awkward situation. Now, the French can afford to come out and say, boys, settle down. We have to talk, at least start this process, because France is the one neutral country which has signed an agreement many years ago with both Ukraine and Russia to be the arbiter of all of these strategic disputes between Russia and Ukraine. That's the Normandy Accord. So Macron does have a role to play there, and that's why he came and visited Biden recently in Washington. President Biden himself has made such a deal of vilifying President Putin and Russia that he also cannot afford to quickly turn around and say, well, okay, now we need to talk. The reality is that they will have to talk, because otherwise it becomes a very expensive exercise for both Washington and everybody else. So, again, I repeat the thing which we've said on this program before, Zelensky will fight to the last U.S. dollar, and Biden will fight to the last poor Ukrainian soldier and volunteer. None of this actually serves the cause of logical strategic development for Ukraine or for the eastern or western positions, but it's where the leaders have painted themselves. So essentially, they have to find a way to start backing off, and this winter is the start of that. Now, Zelensky is afraid that this winter will see him abandoned by Washington and by the NATO states, and the Western European states particularly are in dire straits, cannot afford to give Ukraine what it wants. Poland feels it has no option other than to support Ukraine, and the same applies to the Baltic states. But Germany is falling apart, and all we get from the Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, in Berlin, is that he wants to rationalize this in a way which is saying, well, it's Zeitenwende, you know, a turning point in global history, and we have to re-embrace China, and we have to be more authoritative and authoritarian in Europe. And he's saying Germany, or he's saying what he just said in an article in Foreign Policy was Foreign Affairs, rather, was that Germans are intent on becoming the guarantor of European securities that our allies expect us to be, a bridge builder within the European Union and an advocate for multilateral solutions to global problems. Well, I mean, that might have been true two decades ago, but the reality is that Germany itself is now impoverished. As my Berlin correspondent this morning told me, the Germans awakened a couple of weeks ago and found that they were indeed cold, and that it was going to be a bitter winter of starvation, privation, and declining living standards, in which they were warned would happen, but somehow managed to ignore, like the crickets playing gleefully through the summer and not thinking about the coming winter. And Germany is now in that coming winter, and Olaf Scholz is trying to make it look as though it's a statesmanlike approach that he's taking to see Germany through this and to shepherd Europe through this. He has really lost the plot, but we can expect to see him use his declining economic resources to build the military, up to 3% of GDP to be spent on defense, for example. But at the same time, living standards are declining. And as we saw with Ukraine, we're now starting to see with Germany, companies and people are voting with their feet abandoning it.
Let's come to the weather. The report from London is that it's cold and that people have turned on their electric heat and they're taxing the system right now. The subsidies may or may not be adequate, but certainly that doesn't help the prosperity of the country. The report from Berlin, as you say, it's cold. It's cold throughout Northern Europe, and all of the conditions point to a genuine winter. The wind is not blowing. So right now, the Wall Street Journal reports that the participation of the renewables is not adequate, and they have to call on more of the other parts of their energy complex, which would be natural gas, coal, and nuclear energy. All of that points to a puzzle here. Does Europe continue to suffer what looks to be the vicissitudes of weather because the principals don't want to talk? There seems to be a formula that will easily discomfort the politicians. You're afraid of talking while we can't afford to heat the house at the same time we feed the children. That won't work, Gregory, not in democracies.
That's correct. I think the public opposition to this massive European largesse toward Ukraine is going to be profound. I think people are just going to say, hey, as you said, look after us, don't look after another country. We need the energy, we need the cash, we need to bolster our own economy. And particularly Germany is committed to denying the need for fossil fuels, denying the need for nuclear energy as well. And it becomes a joke because there is no way, even if the wind was blowing, that the renewables are going to give sufficient energy to get the country through the winter. The government is going to be forced into bigger and bigger lies as it imports more and more fossil fuels from places other than Russia. And many Germans are already saying and have already identified the United States as no longer the ally, but the enemy, which cut them off from realistic supplies of oil and gas from Central Asia and from Russia.
Gregory, I think that this same formula comes home to the United States. While we're not going to struggle with heat, we do have higher bills, but we're not going to struggle with heat. But the question can be raised, why are we sending major weapon systems and enormous amounts of money to a country that no longer has an economy, that may be half or less of the population that existed last February? Why are we doing this for what gain? Because we're too proud to talk? We're too proud to fight and we're too proud to talk. We're upgrading Wilson. At the same time, we're not provided a vision of the future. The Biden administration, the Congress, both houses of Congress do not tell us where we're going. They just continue to feed the war machine. That doesn't sound sustainable.
It's not sustainable. And we're lucky that the United States economy has held together so well. But all of this challenges the credibility of the dollar and the global economy. So we're all going to start to suffer from this. This is going to be exacerbated, of course, by the continued economic decline of the People's Republic of China. So there is no long-term planning. We're seeing that policy in Washington is now based around jingoism, and the jingoism hasn't been geared toward the country which declared itself to be at war with the United States, namely the People's Republic of China. It's been declared against Russia, which kept saying that it didn't want to go to war. It didn't want to have to resist NATO's encroachments eastward. So we've created this conflict situation, which gets us nowhere. And we're now going to come to a very bitter winter in the most long-term, meaningful sense of it. We're coming into several years of policy winter, of poor economic options available to us around the world. And it's not because the world can't produce enough food or can't produce enough energy, because we've proven that we can do that with one hand tied behind our back. The reality is we are now seeing a failure of policy, which has cut the food supply, cut the energy supply, cut economic opportunities and the like. So, at some stage, people are going to start getting very restive.
One more detail about Germany, because you mentioned Herr Schulz, the Chancellor of Germany's trip to China and his essay, which I recommend to everyone to study, because it's simultaneously utopian doctrine and a detailed analysis of Germany's business opportunities. What is striking to me about Germany right now is that it does not seem to be committed to either the future possibilities of security in Europe, nor to the next trade iteration, whatever it looks like, in the trade architecture of the world without Russia and with China suspect. In fact, I'm told that Germany is committed to the past, Gregory. They want the way life used to be. They want to avoid change. They want to go back to Ostpolitik, even if they have to substitute Beijing for Moscow. That is not a leader position. Is the rest of Europe aware of the fact that Germany is dragging its feet on purpose?
Well, I don't know whether they think that Germany is dragging its feet on purpose, but I think most of Europe now looks to Germany with some disdain at the decline in Germany's ability to even cohesively control the European economy, let alone the German economy. And what Scholz said was, the world is not doomed to once again separate into competing blocks. Well, it's
we have.
That is exactly what's happened, and he is reinforcing that. And I think he's going cap in hand to Beijing immediately after the 20th Party Congress in mid-October was just like Neville Chamberlain going to Berlin to see Hitler and coming back with a piece of paper saying peace in our time. And it's Scholz is as naive and hapless as was Neville Chamberlain.
It's time for the King Charles Report, my favorite new segment with Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.